How's it going, everyone? This is Pat Loika. You're listening to Loika Mania episode 20. Yes, I know, it's been a while since we've been on. Been kind of busy, been dealing with post-New York Comic Con stuff. In the 2 weeks that we haven't been on, we had the New York Comic Con, we had some other stuff going on. Like I attended the Spike TV Scream Awards, and I did some all this other stuff. So I haven't been able to record, which is unfortunate. But I am back, and I'm going to talk a bit about the New York Comic Con very briefly, and then talk about some of the books I've been reading the last couple of weeks that I've absolutely enjoyed. And yeah, I think that would cover everything. And actually, there's a couple of movies too that I've seen, so I'll probably get into that for a little bit as well. So we'll start with the New York Comic Con. That was a lot of fun, folks. If you have never been to the New York Comic Con, well, this past year they have they've grown exponentially since last year. It's partly because they have combined the New York convention, the New York Comic Con, with the New York Anime Festival, which I think is a good move. I like the big crowd. I like the atmosphere. It reminds me a lot of San Diego, but taking place in the East Coast. But this is a more focused crowd than the San Diego crowd usually is. And you all know how much I love the San Diego show. And I love, you know, the type of crowd it attracts. But this is a very focused crowd. They know what they want. They've made some interesting choices with regards to setup. Like Artist Alley for the anime festival was downstairs. The actual Artist Alley for a Comic Con is in another section of the Javits that's like separated from the main convention hall, which is also a good idea because now you get some dedicated traffic going towards Artist Alley for people who really want to see the artists. Although they could do a better job with their floor maps and their diagrams. That's really the only issue I've had. It was the biggest Artist Alley I've ever seen because there are literally about 300 artists in there, who all had a table, and most of them showed up. You know, there were barely any no-shows, and it was a really fantastic experience because I got to talk to a lot of people, you know, a lot of people who I know, and a lot of people that I got to meet for the first time. And there was a lot of phenomenal work on display there. There are some really, really cool announcements also that I'll probably not get into because you probably heard of those, you know, enough already. Probably the most notable announcement, though, I do want to touch upon is the DC announcement about lowering all their books back to $2.99, which I think is a brilliant move. And yeah, you lose two pages, and there is a downside to it, but you know what? It's two pages, and if you're a good storyteller, you can do a good story in 20 pages, and that's a nice challenge also to everyone involved making comics for them. I am sad, though, that some books, like all the books that come with a cool backup story, like Action Comics, for example, will probably have their backups go somewhere else. I believe they're going to be collecting everything in a one shot to finish the story. It's, you know, it's unfortunate, and it would have been nice to have those going on for a while. But the, you know, I understand the situation they're in and the choices they had to make, and I think they want to make as many people happy as they can, and that's probably the best way for them to do it. So good on you, DC. Good work in that price drop, and we'll see how everything else goes from here. Hopefully it does translate into good sales, and it becomes a trend that people start dropping prices, and, you know, we'll see where it goes. Other things I want to touch upon with regards to New York. I had seen so many friends and so many listeners. I don't even know how else to talk about it because I might neglect or forget someone, and it's been a couple of weeks since then. It was really nice to see. There's a lot of people that I got to see that I haven't seen in a while. It was really, really good to see all these people. And all the people I met for the first time also, been great. A lot of people really lived up to my expectations, and some exceeded them. And the only bummer about the New York trip is the fact that I didn't get to see a couple folks that I've been wanting to see for a while. They know who they are. I'm really sad they didn't make it out, but, you know, that's what next year's for. And I'm actually preparing for next year already. I got my hotel room booked. Big thanks also, when we're thinking of hotels, big thanks to Patricia Ryan over at the New Yorker Hotel. She took care of my reservation, and she gave me and the Legion the probably the most kick-ass suite we could ever get. And I can't even talk about the rate we got, because that would make people cry, because it's amazing. The New York Con, as far as shopping is concerned, is probably one of the best shopping cons ever, because within the first hour of the convention, we pretty much had to go. Within the first hour of the show being open to professionals, only me and my entire crew, or as I like to call them, the Legion of Loika, we all got in about early, and within the first hour of the show, we pretty much bought everything that we could possibly carry, and we had to retreat back to the hotel room to put everything away. And my God, there was a lot of books. There's tons of good stuff there, like action figures and statues and all that stuff, really cheap. I went and did something that I never thought I would do again, and that's buy a statue at a convention, because I got for such a ridiculously low rate, and man. that got me to the statue thing again. So I'm currently hunting down certain statues that Bowen has quit on the last few years, when I was kind of quit the statue buying thing, and I'm trying to rebuild my collection of statues. I'm basically picking up the characters I like. So that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm not going to be completist or anything. I just want to get the characters I love. That should be it for New York. And let's talk about some comics. There have been a lot of good stuff in the last couple of weeks, but I'm going to jump straight to the stuff that came out this past week, just to kind of keep us current. There have been a lot of things that came out in the last couple of weeks, though. One notable thing that I want to mention is the new Charles Burns graphic novel, X'd Out. Brilliant stuff. I've been a big fan of Charles Burns since, well, Black Hole made me a big fan anyway. But I remember, okay, this kind of ties back to New York. I remember my first year going to New York in 2006. A friend of mine took me to Pratt Institute, and there was an exhibit of graphic novel comic art. You know, I got to see some original Hernandez Brothers stuff. I got to see original Charles Burns Black Hole pages, and that was a very life-changing experience for me, because I got to. I fell in love with the simplicity of the line work and the storytelling involved in the pages. I got to see, you know, I got to see some incredible work, and that really got me motivated into doing certain things with my own work. Although it's tough to try to follow what I saw. But I think that trip made me a better artist. And because of that, I'm basically going to read anything by those guys, particularly Charles Burns. And X'd Out is no exception. I hope you pick that book up. It's a wonderful book, and I hope everyone gets into it. As far as this week's books go, there are quite a few books that came out, but the best book of the week, at least from what I've read so far, is Fantastic Four, number 584. It's part two of the 3 storyline. And Steve Epting and John Hickman are an amazing team. I think Steve Epting may have brought out the best out of John Hickman, because, I mean, I'll be honest, the last few issues of Fantastic Four haven't been... I mean, before Steve Epting came on board, I admit they haven't been... They haven't been really my favorite. You know, I haven't been into it as much as I was when they first started, when Hickman first started with his first arc. But this has been phenomenal. The premise behind this chapter, of course, focuses on Ben Grimm, and the basic premise is this: he is given a serum or whatever that will allow him to turn back into a regular person for about a week's time in a year. And of course, he ingests this stuff, and Johnny Storm takes him out, you know, for a night out in the city. And it is some of the finest character work I've ever seen done to the Fantastic Four. There's a cool montage here of things that that Ben and Johnny decide to do. Like they go downtown, of course, New York City. They go to watch a Giants game. They go to they go have dinner. There's a lot of stuff. I don't want to ruin everything for you. I mean, anything that's thing related makes an appearance here, including, of course, a brand new version of the Yancey Street Gang, which is probably one of the funniest and very timeliest versions of this particular group ever. Aside from the Ben Grimm stuff, of course, there's some other things going on. Sue Storm takes a trip to Utopia to meet with a certain person that Sue Storm is acquainted with. Well, not just acquainted with, anyway. Of course, there's some other stuff going on with Reed. And of course, you know, the cliffhanger from the last issue is touched upon once again. And we're left with another cliffhanger that, you know, leaves you wanting for more. I can't stress enough how much I love this issue. John Hickman, Steve Epting, and Paul Mouse's coloring, and we'll give some serious props go to Russ Wooton as well, the letterer. He just made the book look natural. Good lettering. Good lettering is when the letterer doesn't call attention to himself, and this is another one of those. It has been a really, really good book, especially in the last two issues. I mean, if you've never read FF before, I can see you getting into it from this, because this is a good introduction to the characters, as well as, it's just a good story, This is issue 584, 583 still out there. Get both. Seriously, read the storyline. You might get into the FF because of this. Next thing I want to talk about is Uncanny X-Men number 529, featuring a cover by Terry Dodson, written by Matt Fraction and illustrated by Will Spartacio. This is actually an improvement, because I mentioned before that I haven't been feeling Will's art. I don't know, maybe I've outgrown my liking of his work, or maybe it's just, I don't know, It's kind of hard to explain it, but it hasn't been doing it for me. This issue was an improvement, I think. It's much better than the last couple. This is more of the Five Lights storyline, and we are getting introduced to the new mutant, the new mutants that were revealed post Second Coming, and there's some all kinds of stuff going on here, like Emma Frost's secret with particularly Shinobi Shaw. Sebastian Shaw, and how she tries to get rid of him from Utopia. Kitty Pryde's finally out of her tube, and apparently there's some kind of sickness going around in Utopia, which has some people in quarantine. And this is probably what we're going to touch upon in the next storyline, because the next story arc is titled Quarantine. But yeah, this is a nice issue. There's a preview of Generation Hope in here as well, with a few preview pages. Looks really nice. I don't know who the artist is for this particular title, but I really dig the art, and I kind of wish that artist was doing. I wouldn't mind seeing that guy alternate on Uncanny also, because the artist of that preview clearly has a grasp of how the mutant characters work. Anyway, this was a decent issue, not the greatest issue in the world, but it was cool. It progresses the story and it leads us into the next one, so it's worth picking up. But I think you're probably better off picking up the next issue, which would be 530. Next on the agenda is Secret Avengers number 6, part 1 of a new storyline featuring Shang-Chi, the Master of Kung Fu. If you are an Iron Fist fan, there is a character from that old Immortal Iron Fist series that ended that makes an appearance here, and you will probably dig it. Mike Giordano, man, this storyline particularly was made for him just because he draws some kick-ass fight scenes here with, you know, some kung fu fight scenes. There's a lot of there's a lot of callbacks to old stuff, and the thing that interests me the most is how they're trying to avoid mentioning a certain character's name. I mean, Shang-Chi's father. If you've read Doug Munch and Paul Gulacy's Master of Kung Fu, you know exactly who I'm talking about. Well, let's just put it out of the way. Fu Manchu. It's amazing how they go to great lengths to avoid saying the character's name because of all the legal drama involving that particular character and the ownership and whatever. But it's really cool. You know, it follows up on a lot of the stuff that went on in that old book, but you don't really need to have read that book to particularly get this story, because this is, you know, a modern story. It's really good. Ed Brubaker, it looks like Ed Brubaker is having a lot of fun with this book. I mean, between him playing around with cosmic stuff last storyline, and him playing with this, you can tell he's scratching a lot of different genre itches, you know, while he's working on this book. And Mike Diodato, he seems to bring the best out of Mike Diodato. I mean, I thought Brian Bendis did a good job of that back when he was doing Dark Avengers with him, but this may be even better, you know, as far as quality of the art's concerned. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. It's too early to tell where this is going, because knowing Ed Brubaker, he twists a story. He knows how to put a good twist to any story, and this is no exception to it. And I think there's more going on to this storyline than meets the eye. So I'm looking forward to when he starts, you know, letting us see what's going on. In the next book I want to talk about is another, you know, related title. It's Avengers number 6. It's part 6 of the Time Stream story by Brian Michael Bendis, John Romita Jr., and of course Klaus Janson with Tom Palmer on inks and Dean White coloring. And I forgot to mention also Secret Avengers, colored by Rain Barreto. Again, brilliant stuff. Pick it up. It's you know, like I mentioned, it's a new storyline, so this is the perfect time to jump on. That's issue 6, by the way, of Secret Avengers. And back to regular Avengers number 6. Here we more of the time traveling hijinks is dealt with. It is pretty cool to see Bucky as they sent an away team basically of Avengers to deal with stuff going on across the time stream, and it's led by Iron Man with Bucky Cap and Wolverine and Novar. And it's very interesting to see these characters, particularly Wolverine and Bucky, in settings like this, because they're not really the type of guys who would be involved in big, I guess, cataclysmic level type of, you know, events. So it's interesting to see them being jumped around the time stream, confronting Ultron and doing all this stuff. We get a resolution here, which is really cool and very clever, and yeah, I thought it was interesting how they actually beat the enemy here, how they beat Ultron, and how they eventually, you know, well, I'm not gonna, obviously, you know, they're gonna fix the timeline, so they did fix the timeline, but it's just interesting how they got there. Again, at this point, I'm not going to say anything else with regards to story points, but I will say the art by Romita Jr. and the inkers involved was phenomenal. Absolutely. I mean, JRJR, as mentioned in many, in a lot of the interviews leading up to the release of the book, you know, JRJR drew Iron Man, he drew Spider-Man, he drew Wolverine, and he drew Captain. He drew pretty much all these characters at one point in their own books, and he draws a somewhat definitive version of the character each time, and you get to see that here. The only thing here, though, that's noticeable is the fact that you could tell that there's a different inker at a certain point. It's easy to tell when it's Klaus Janson inking, it's easy to tell when Tom Palmer is inking. And although it looks like Tom Palmer is like kind of holding back in his inks, in his pages, because he tries to match actually tries to simplify it, because we all know how Klaus Janson inks over Romita Jr. And there's a distinct difference between how he does things and between how Tom Palmer does things, and you can tell when the switch takes place. I mean, when you read the book, you will know what I'm talking about, especially if you know your inkers. I'm looking at you, David Price. You know what I'm talking about here. And it's even more proof that an inker really does have an influence on how the artwork turns out later on. So, as far as the book goes, pick it up. It's a very satisfying resolution. It also builds towards something that may happen later on within this particular book. It's, of course, about the future. And speaking of future, someone with a very screwed up future ahead is Captain America. Issue 611 came out. It's by Ed Brubaker and illustrated by Daniel Acuna. And he does everything from pencils to colors. And this is some fantastic stuff, ladies and gentlemen. This is probably, I've never fallen out of love with Cap. There's one storyline that I wasn't really that big on, but I still love the book anyway. But this, since the Baron Zemo story took place, and based on what I've read in this first issue of this storyline, I think I like to say it's a return to form for Ed Brubaker, and I was not wrong. This is the trial of Captain America. We all know what had happened recently. Bucky's identity was revealed to pretty much the world thanks to Baron Zemo. And now they're trying to deal with the fallout of that. And part of that would probably mean that Bucky will probably have to face his crimes as the Winter Soldier. Of course, obviously he was under mind control and there was all this stuff going on with his head. So there's some, they can prove him innocent. He can be proven innocent on this thing. But, to kind of protect himself and the Captain America identity and all that, it would be in his best interests to stand trial. There's really lots of good stuff here, lots of great character stuff. We get a lot of Hawkeye in this issue, which is awesome, because Hawkeye is probably one of the bigger supporters of Buck. And he's learning all this for the first time just now. And his reactions are great. Love the scenes between him and Steve Rogers, Black Widow, and all these characters. Like they're just basically talking about what to do with the situation as far as the Avengers are concerned. And it's also nice to see Daniel Acuna drawing the Black Widow again. Just to say, really, really good issue. I can't wait to see where this goes. I believe Butch Guys returns next issue. And I'm looking forward to that as well. But I certainly wouldn't mind if Daniel Acuna takes over Cap from this point, because he is doing a phenomenal job. And I absolutely love this issue. This is the Cap story that I've been wanting to see for a while. I mean, if you think about it, they've been building up to this forever. So I can't wait to see where this goes from here. And there's also, of course, a backup story in here, the Nomad, Girl Without a World, featuring a guest appearance by Black Widow. A switch to a new artist is by Felipe Andrade. Again, it's really nice. It's very, the art reminds me a bit of the, it's kind of like a mix between Scotty Young and Humberto Ramos. Don't skip through this, because this is some nice stuff. This is a very action-packed backup story. And art's nice. And, of course, Sean McKeever's scripts are always great. So that is definitely worth checking out. So, it's a really nice package for well worth $4 you spend to buy the book. So Cap 611, great book. That'll be it for comics this week. I do want to make a quick mention of Batman Robin number 15, because that book was insane. And really not much else aside from that I want to get into. Want to talk about some movie stuff real quick. I mentioned I've seen a few movies. I went to see Jackass 3D, which was amazing. It's hilarious. It's everything I wanted that movie to be. It's fun. It's probably the best 3D I've ever seen in a movie, because those guys, they knew what they were doing when they made that movie, and they made it specifically to be 3D. You can kind of tell that those guys were getting old, though, just because of the way they're reacting whenever they're about to undergo their next, I guess, physical challenge. you can tell because there's an apprehension, you know, on some of these people, on some of these guys, of whether or not they want to go through this. You can kind of see that they really didn't want to do this anymore. Some of them are still gung ho about it, like Wee Man. He was really into it, and he would jump into it anyway. But man, those guys, they're getting there. Hopefully, they don't do any more. I think they can't really top this at this point. But it's definitely worth checking out. I mean, if you want to have a good if you want some good dumb fun in a movie theater, watch this. Although there may be some stuff here that'll gross you out, but I'm not going to tell you what, because that'll just spoil it. So give it a look. Another movie I saw recently was Red, based off of Warren Ellis and Cully Hamner's graphic novel or comic book. You know, people tend to be touchy over the term graphic novel or comic book, but it's based off of their work, and while it's a complete departure from what they did, at the same time, I'm going to be honest here, it's a bit more enjoyable in movie form. I had a lot of fun watching that movie. It's, you know, it had a great cast, it had a very fun script, actually. I laughed quite a bit watching this movie. All the actors, the cast, particularly John Malkovich, really stole the show. It's great to see Brian Cox also. Brian Cox has always been one of my favorite character actors. And, of course, Helen Mirren was awesome as well. It was a fantastic movie. It's not going to change the world or anything. It's not going to light your world on fire, but you will have a good time. And you come out of it feeling like, you know what, that was a good way to kill time. So, yeah, Red was fun. Again, I can't really say much. I don't want to ruin anything. If you read the comic book, you kind of have an inkling as to what happens here. But imagine that, but a bit more intensified with a bigger cast. Oh, with a lot more personality, too. So that's really how Red is. Honestly, though, the actors really, they're what make this movie great. The script could have been forgettable in the hands of a different cast, but with this particular cast, it really transcended what it is, and it became a more enjoyable, really fun movie. So give us a look. Seriously, you won't regret watching this. So take my word for it. Another movie I saw recently in the theater, after a very, very long time, was Back to the Future. They did a 25th anniversary screening, and I love that movie. I mean, it never gets old. It holds up really well. All the characters, you know, Marty McFly, Doc Brown, it's still so much fun. I love those characters. I love that movie, and I always thought that they could keep going. They have decided to do more, and you know, it's got such a memorable cast of characters, such a memorable. I don't even know how to put it to words properly without describing it. You know, I don't know how to do it justice. Honestly, it's such a great book. Such a great movie. Probably one of the best of the 80s, man. As far as the 80s are concerned, it was always between that or Ghostbusters. And every now and then, I would be asked to choose between the two, and I always pick Back to the Future, because there's just something about Back to the Future that just speaks to me better than Ghostbusters ever did. So, obviously, they're done doing the anniversary screenings. Hopefully, you got to catch it while you had the chance, because it was awesome to see that movie again in a big screen with a good sound system and everything. The only setback, I think, about the high-definition re-release of Back to the Future is that the makeup that they use to make people look old it kind of does pop up when you're looking at the screen. Sometimes sometimes you get to a point where you kind of overdo it when you're doing, you know, when you're doing high definition and you're doing remastering. And sometimes it's kind of detrimental to the material you're watching. So when you pick up your Back to the Future Blu-rays, and I'm pretty sure a lot of you will, I hope you can handle dealing with that stuff. Because I got over it, but you know, it's still kind of jarring to see that in 3D, not 3D, but in high def, seeing some of the stuff they do popping up, you know, kind of ruining the movie magic for you. Yeah. Anyways, one last thing to talk about. It is it is the pilot episode of a show that premiered over the weekend. By the time you listen to this, the weekend would have been over. So I got to see the pilot of The Walking Dead from AMC. It is, of course, based off of the comic book series by Robert Kirkman, Tony Moore, and Charlie Adler. And this is written and directed by Frank Darabont, who does fantastic, you know, thrillers, and he does good movies. You know, he did Shawshank Redemption, Green Mile, The Mist. Well, he did a phenomenal job adapting The Walking Dead for TV. Lots of really, really cool moments in the actual show. The pilot basically goes through the first issue of the ongoing Walking Dead series, and he adds a lot to it. I mean, I honestly think the stuff that they added for the pilot was, you know, all the character related stuff that they added was great, and it's even gotten to a point where Robert Kirkman himself has admitted that, you know, he wished he had followed some of that stuff, which says a lot about, you know, the quality of the writing and just the quality of the production, you know, going on here. I'm really anxious to see where this show goes. I can't wait for them to get to certain characters and storylines that come in the future, and that will mean that for it to get there, though, the show has to be healthy. It has to do well in the ratings, and hopefully, I mean, judging by the hype and all the stuff going on around it, I don't think it's going to have a problem, you know, getting to that point where it would get to, you know, Michonne and the governor and all that stuff. I'm looking forward for them to get there. In the meantime, though, the pilot was brilliant. We only got to see a few major characters for a good time. We got to see Rick, of course. We got to see Morgan and his son Dwayne. We got to, you know, they're all really, really well fleshed out. They're all, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're real people. You know, just because of the way they were written. And there are some really powerful, emotionally gut-wrenching scenes here, particularly involving Morgan, that I will not ruin for you because, like I said, it just came out. But you will know what I'm talking about when you see it. And we also caught a glimpse of the rest of the cast here. We caught a glimpse of Shane. We caught a glimpse of Lori and Carl and everyone else. But you know, that's not till we will see more of them later on. So as far as Walking Dead is concerned, you must watch the show because it's seriously for an adaptation. This is probably the best thing I have seen. I mean, if you're talking about that adaptation of something that exists, you know, an adaptation of a storyline or an ongoing series or whatever, this is probably the best. I mean, when you see movies like Iron Man and all that, they basically adapt the character onto the screen and they just do whatever kind of story they feel like doing. This is actually focused on the actual story you read on the books, you know, and it's telling a long-form television narrative based on that story. And just based on this first episode alone, I can tell they're going to surpass. They're going to surpass every other comic adaptation out there. This really has the potential to be a game changer as far as comic adaptations go. And I think But whether the success or failure of the show will determine whether or not we can see other shows that are similar. I mean, we've always wanted a Preacher TV show. This could, you know, the success of this may allow for that. Or maybe, there's so many books out there. Fables, 100 Bullets, you name it. Like, all these long-form books that we loved, all these finite stories that have an ending, that we've always wanted to see translated to the big screen. The possibilities of those coming to reality may hinge on the success or failure of The Walking Dead. So if you want to see more comic adaptations, that'll be as good as this. You should probably support this thing by watching it. Especially if you're a fan of the comic to begin with, you know. If you're a fan of Walking Dead, and there's a lot of you out there, you should be watching this show. And I think you will love it, and you will watch it because you love it. Not because I just told you that this could possibly lead to more shows similar to this. So, yeah, check it out. It's on AMC. It was Sunday nights. This is phenomenal, folks. Great acting, great script, great production. My God, I can't believe they get away with some of the stuff they got away with in this pilot alone, because there's some stuff there that'll make you wonder, you know, they'll get you asking how they got this thing going to begin with, because it's zombies, there's gore in there, there's even some cussing in for good measure. It's got everything you want, so I can't see why you can't watch. And that should be it for this week. Be sure to stop by my website at patloika.com, which is my blog, and just check out whatever I have there. I am still accepting commission requests, so you can message me on Facebook or on Twitter if you're following me and I'm following you. The commissions, I would love to take as many as possible, particularly since I'm doing some fundraising for a friend of mine who had some very unfortunate stuff go on, and I'm trying to help a brother out, basically. So check that out. Of course, you can find me in the usual spots: Facebook, Twitter, you name it, you'll find me there. And if you want to check out my photos from the New York Comic Con, just go to flickr.com/photos/PatLoika. And there will be a link to that also in the PatLoika.com page. So you don't have to worry about memorizing all that stuff. And if you have any comments, you want to talk about anything, send an email to theloika@gmail.com. And I will gladly read your emails and respond on the air. So that should be it for now, and until next week, y'all take it easy. See you later. It's the-